A stalemate at City Hall over funding for schools. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, much to get into as we have a conversation with Jacksonville City Council President Scott Wilson. You can join the show. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, we've got an update on the state of downtown Jacksonville. All of that and more coming up. But first this hour, the Duval County School Board and the Jacksonville City Council met yesterday in a contentious session, and there was no resolution to the school board's push to ask the council to put a referendum before the voters to fund school repair and construction. We're beginning the hour with a closer look at that and other issues as we welcome Jacksonville City Council President Scott Wilson to Studio 5. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on the show. What are your questions for City Council President Scott Wilson? Now's the time to connect. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. President Wilson, first off, let me ask you your thoughts about the resolution or lack of it to yesterday's meeting with the school board.
I thought yesterday's meeting was a very productive meeting. This began shortly after I became president. I attended the school board meeting and I suggested a plan forward. That plan forward began with the city council writing their questions down collectively, sending them to the school board. The school board then responded with answers, and then we scheduled this joint meeting. I thought the joint meeting was very productive. It gave us an opportunity to really explain in detail what our questions were. And the school board members, the city council members, and the superintendent were all on the dais together. So I felt like we were all on equal footing. Each elected member received 3 minutes to ask their questions or make clarification. And the school board superintendent was very helpful in responding to those questions. I believe that there still are unanswered questions. And my whole point behind having a meeting yesterday was we have 5 days now before committee. So it's a great opportunity to get clarification on those questions. And I've encouraged the school board superintendent and the members to reach out to the city council members who may still have questions on the table. That way they can get answered prior to next week.
Do you believe this referendum is dead for 2019? Will it go before the voters maybe next year?
So for me personally, I think 2019 is not doable. If we are going to have an election, I want it to be a full election where people have an opportunity to go to the polls and vote, as well as folks who like to do absentee ballots. I believe restricting it to absentee ballots does not allow everyone to participate in the process. The election in 2019 would cost $1 million or so, and I think that's a lot of money to risk this quickly. 2020, we already have an election, and I believe that's the appropriate place to put this on the ballot. It also gives the school board more time to go out and attend community meetings and share with the public what exactly their plan is. I've said from the beginning, I have concerns about schools that are closing, especially schools that are closing in my district. The folks that live near there really don't know what's coming online with this referendum. So I believe more community conversations should be had.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for Jacksonville City Council President Scott Wilson. The number to join us is 549-2937. Okay, let me ask you as well, what's your response to those who've criticized this process and the city council? Some perceive a coordinated effort on the part of the city's political leadership to usurp the authority and the operating budget of the school board. Their autonomy is guaranteed by state statute. What's your response to that criticism?
So I have a lot of faith in Jason Gabriel, our general counsel. I believe he has put together a team of leaders in his office who have reviewed this matter and rendered a decision. In my belief, everyone has agreed that the city council should vote to put it on the ballot. The question then comes, do we have a right to vote yes or no? The second question is, do we have a right to ask questions? And in order to earn my vote to place this on the ballot, I want to make sure the public knows what's happening. I want to make sure they know which neighborhood schools are being closed. I want to make sure that I understand and they understand the difference between schools that, when I look at them, very similar. I go to Brookview Elementary a lot because I have neighborhood meetings there, and it's scheduled for renovation. And I have a hard time understanding what the difference is between Brookview, Beauclair, San Jose, Holiday Hill, which are all scheduled for rebuild. And so I want to better understand that before I support placing on the ballot. I believe I have a duty to my constituents to ask questions and do the research. And that's where I stand on the issue.
And certainly all the members have dug into the issues and done their due diligence. That said, what would you say to constituents who feel that the city council is throwing up question after question, objection after objection, and usurping the school board's role? The school board has put forth a comprehensive plan. They hired a superintendent who's successfully done this in another Florida county and is experienced at this kind of thing. Why not just put it before the voters, let the school board handle the school board's business?
Well, we each have our own individual vote that we must make. In order for me to make that vote and make a positive vote, my questions have to be answered. And I am not comfortable putting something on the ballot knowing that schools are going to be closed in my district. And that's going to affect the people that live in my district, not just the students going to those schools, but the people who live in those neighborhoods. One of my initiatives has been to clean up blighted neighborhoods and encourage positive redevelopment. And anything we do that removes schools, change schools, has an effect on neighborhoods. And I want to make sure the constituents understand that.
Haven't the school board members and the superintendent addressed that in their plan, though? They've explained the reasoning behind why they're doing some of these changes?
Well, I've been asking about the community conversations for a while. I was out of town for a week or so, so I'm hopeful that will still happen. I've also asked the difference between the rebuild versus renovation. There was an article in the paper that I wrote. They published it on Monday after another article from the other side of this conversation. But to date, I still don't really have the answers to those questions, so I'm not prepared to vote. I heard other colleagues talk about they would like to see a list of when projects are going to be done because voters want to know that. And once we pass this and we place it on the ballot, the plan cannot be changed. It's either an up or down vote. And to be honest with you, I don't think it would pass in 2019. I don't think the school board has enough time to sell the plan to the public. And at a cost of $1 million, I think it should be a very carefully thought out discussion as far as when it's done. And the school board needs an opportunity to go out there and speak to the community.
The other controversy about this has to do with the insistence of some city council members, along with other prominent people in the community, that charter schools in Duval County get their fair share of the tax dollars. The school board will counter by saying the push for this referendum is need-based. That is to say that it's really important to shore up some of the oldest schools in the state, primarily on Jacksonville's northwest side. They are in poor and minority neighborhoods. What's your reaction to school board member Warren Jones, who also used to serve on the city council, his comment yesterday that he believes this whole saga has racial overtones, that there's a reluctance on the part of the city to properly fund schools in African-American majority neighborhoods?
So I'll start out by saying the third highest dollar amount in school board districts is District 3, and that's where I live. So while I understand that the Northwest certainly has more issues and more need, we're number 3 on the list, and we're in the South Side. So I think it's an issue citywide, and the older neighborhoods have more problems. There's no doubt about it. The conversation revolving around racial tones, I don't know if that's factual. I could see where he might believe that because of past decisions that were made. Obviously, segregation caused a lot of people a lot of problems, and I really hadn't put a lot of thought into that until I heard that yesterday.
Right. I mean, I think it goes to the division in this community. People have really different perceptions about what's happening. Certainly, African-Americans in this community feel that their neighborhoods have been neglected for a long time, and they view with suspicion this reluctance to put a referendum on the ballot that would redress some of those past wrongs. What about that?
Well, I've always said from day one that this should go on the ballot, and I will support it going on the ballot, but I have questions I need answered. And so at the point in time when the questions are answered, I'm ready to put it on the ballot. I don't think 2019 is the appropriate date. I still think 2020 is the appropriate date. But I'll support putting it on the ballot for 2020.
Let me get your reaction to another matter that popped up just yesterday. The Times Union reported that the head of the Kids Hope Alliance, Joe Peppers, has written a memo, and it's accusing top members of the mayor's staff of improperly pressuring him to allocate grant money for violence prevention programs in this city to favored groups rather than going through the official procurement process. This is breaking just as the city's recording its 100th homicide for 2019. What's your reaction?
I'm saddened by what I read. I don't know the facts of the case. I only know what I read in the news articles. As far as the murder rate go, it's something we certainly need to address. As a city, we have added many new police officers. We have added programs like ShotSpotter, the Cure Violence program. I'm open to any other programs or ideas or suggestions that are workable. I just don't know off the top of my head what those are. I look for our professionals in the law enforcement community to share with me ideas that they believe might help curb the violence more. I will say that most of this violence, from what I've seen and read and learned, is gang-related, drug-related, and things of that nature. And it's a very small percentage of our population. While I say that, it's still a serious concern, and we need to address it. I will support most anything that I believe will help curb the violence. I supported the Cure Violence. I supported those mini grants you mentioned a minute ago. I also supported the ShotSpotter. Mm-hmm. And I realized all of those programs are focused on the northwest part of town, and that's where the need is at. A lot of my constituents hear me talk about the South Side a lot.
Yeah.
And I represent the South Side. But where the need is, I will support spending those dollars in that area.
With regard to the allegations, as you said, they have not been proven. These allegations being reported by Mr. Peppers. However, they come on the heels of a former staffer, Sam Musso, receiving a generous no-bid consulting contract right after retiring from the city. A growing narrative is emerging among some constituents of potential corruption at Jacksonville City Hall. There have even been calls for an independent investigation. If these allegations prove out, would you support that?
I will certainly look at the merits of that and make a decision at that time. I don't have any facts in front of me, so it's really hard for me to say which direction I would go. I believe in an ethical government, and I believe in ensuring all employees work in a fair workplace. And I will support whatever measures are required to help make sure that happens.
All right. And lots of calls for Jacksonville City Council President Scott Wilson. What's on your mind? It's 549-2937. Susan is in Mandarin. Go ahead, Susan. You're on the air. Hi, Susan.
It's my understanding that the school board can not get any more money through a bond until the voters approve the referendum. So if the voters don't approve the referendum in 2019, the security enhancements and the repairs cannot begin in 2020. And I'm wondering on Scott Wilson's feelings about leaving, not getting those security enhancements, and also leaving the schools that are in disrepair for another year. And he keeps saying he won't vote on it, but it's really the voters that are supposed to be allowed to vote on it. All he has to do is put it on the ballot and let us vote on it. And you've asked him other questions. He seems like he's wanting to do the school board's job, and we all elected the school board to do their job. And he's got a lot of other stuff to do, like what written guarantees are developers giving the city council before they invest their tax dollars on Lot J? And why was the landing tenants kicked out of the property before a plan was in place? And what will be the long-term ramifications to the citizens if the leadership at JEA is working to sell JEA? And also, like you mentioned, what about the worries that we have that Curry is pressuring people to give money to big donors rather than going through the design procurement process? And what about, and as you mentioned too, the plans to reduce violence? Scott Wilson could spend a lot of his time investigating that rather than trying to do the school board's job.
Okay, Susan.
Also,
I hear you, Susan. Yeah, lots of points.
One last one. Okay. About the pension plan, about paying down the pension plan. Thank you.
Okay. She brought up a lot that's on the current political agenda. And, you know, I have to tell you, we are getting lots of tweets, a similar theme. Here's one from Ann. The only issue President Wilson and the council have any responsibility for is to put the issue on the ballot. Do it. What about the frustration out there and the sense that the city council is obstructing on this issue, and the anger about some of these other issues, funding for Lot J, privatizing JEA, and more? As city council president, are you getting that from your constituents, this frustration over these many issues?
So I have a full plate. We have a lot of issues going on in the city of Jacksonville right now, and I will address them one at a time as they come up. Right now, we were handed the school board issue. We did not ask for this issue. The school board came to us and said, we would like for you to place this on the ballot. And so we are going through that process now. To ask me to vote yes without asking any questions is a little unfair. I have a duty to the people who elected me to office to ensure their voices are heard. And if I place this on the ballot without them understanding that it's going to close their neighborhood schools, if I place this on the ballot without them understanding the difference between rebuild and renovation and why, I think it's very unfair. My opinion is the school board has between now and 2020 to go out and have community meetings, explain to the public what they're trying to do, why they're trying to do it, and how it affects each neighborhood. I think that's very important.
In Clay County, the school board is suing over a similar disagreement with their county commission. What would your reaction be if the Duval County School Board goes to court over this?
So our consolidated government is set up in a way to where the general counsel is the legal binding authority for any interlocal decisions. I don't believe it allows them to sue, but I'm not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And that's
they might anyway.
Them and the general counsel.
They might anyway.
And that's fine. That's fine. If they take it off of our plate, I'll be perfectly happy. We have plenty of other things to take up.
Okay.
But if I'm required to vote, I'd like my questions answered.
Tom on the west side. Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning. First, two quick observations. The polls show that the public supports this, and the school board has said that they were willing to pay for it. And my questions are this. What legal authority can he cite for the city council delving so deeply into the school board business, the school board that we elected to run the schools? And second, how is it conscionable to subject our children to the risk of being in unsafe schools for at least another year? I mean, I don't understand either of these stances.
Okay, Tom. I think that is important to bring up. The reason the school board is pushing so hard for this now is because the schools have been deteriorating over a period of many years. Is it responsible to delay this another year? And what about the perception that we're going to hear, I assume from a couple of more callers, that you're getting too much into the business of another constitutionally elected body?
So first, it might be the school board dollars, but they're still taxpayer dollars. And $1 million is a lot of money to risk an election this year. If I thought they could get the word out quick enough, I might consider 2019 a little more closely. I went to a community meeting in June. About 25 people were there. And someone raised a question, would you support this half-cent sales tax? Not one person out of 25 in this blue-collar neighborhood raised their hand and said yes. They had questions about the lottery money. They said, well, my kids aren't in school anymore. They said they already get enough of our property tax dollars. And I'm not saying those are reasons to deny the ballot initiative, but I don't believe the public knows enough about this, and I don't believe they're prepared to vote on it. And I don't think the school board can sell that plan in time for a November election. I think that we have a year. We can talk about community meetings and how we talk to the public and share with the public what the needs are. So, in my opinion, 2020 is the right date.
And do you believe it will go on the ballot in 2020?
I'm ready to support putting it on the ballot in 2020 once my questions are answered, once I understand the plan in a little more detail. I believe my colleagues will support that. It's hard for me to say what they're going to do, but each individual member has their own decision to make. But I told the school board – a month ago. Now, you need 10 votes in the city council and the support of Mayor Lenny Curry. So between now and the time that we vote on it, you have to figure out how you're going to get those votes. And for me, I've shared with them several times what my concerns are, and I look forward to an answer.
Anthony on the south side. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes, good morning. In regards to the charter schools, from what I understand, some of them are leased, if I am correct. So a charter school can go in and close at any time. And if they are leased and those monies are going across the board, how does it even make sense?
Okay. That has been the rub of this. Those that want to see more of the taxpayer money allocated toward charter schools, those who are critical of this and see charter schools seeking an unfair advantage, essentially money going toward leased properties and sometimes profitable properties. What about that?
So for me, I've had a crash course in charter schools. I don't have any children of my own, so I've learned a lot in the last month or so about charter schools. And to be honest, the funding of charter schools has never been my main issue. Other members of the body do have more concern or more thought about the funding for charter schools, and I've listened to that conversation, and I really don't know exactly where I'll land, but it's not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is the people I represent and ensuring they understand the plan and how the plan affects them.
Okay, so many calls for Council President Wilson. Mike on the west side. Go ahead, Mike. Mike hung up. Let's go to Michael at the beaches. Michael, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'd like to address the concept of a mail-in election. First, it wouldn't cost $1 million. According to the supervisor's office, it would cost $750,000. Still a lot of money, but let's be clear what the real numbers are. Second, every voter in Duval County would get a ballot in the mail. The supervisor's office pays for the return postage. So actually, there's really quite a good opportunity here for a huge turnout. And finally, according to certain interpretations, and I can't say where things are going to go, but not only is the city of Jacksonville responsible for paying for the election, but if we end up in court, the city of Jacksonville is responsible for paying for the attorneys for the school board. So by dragging your feet, what you're doing is you're spending the taxpayer money and you're wasting it. Thank you.
Michael, thanks. President Wilson, are you dragging your feet and in the long run costing the city more?
So I've heard a lot of accusations. I've been called a lot of names in the last month or so. It's really saddened me. But I'm going to tell you that I have led on this issue since becoming council president. I was invited to a meeting that Mayor Curry had with the school board chairwoman and the superintendent. I attended that meeting. We walked out together and we said it was a very productive meeting. Look forward to working together to resolve this issue. The next day or a couple days later, I was at their school board meeting and I suggested a plan forward. And we are in the middle of that plan going forward. So I don't believe I've drugged my feet. I believe we have moved this process along as quickly as possible since I was elected president and took over.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. I won't get to all of them, but here are just a couple. Here's one from Donald. If the people are concerned about the details of this proposed plan, then they have the option to vote no. Stop usurping the people's voice with these made-up excuses and put it on the ballot, he says. Here's another one. Let us vote on the referendum. There is no plan for the landing, and they spent millions of tax dollars on that. Let the school board do their job. I am disgusted by this city council and mayor standing in the way of what's best for our students. The surveys show this referendum would pass. Are you usurping the will of the voters on this? I think is the frustration that we're hearing.
Not at all. And, you know, we talk about these issues have been in these schools for years and years and years. So it was brought to us in May, and you must move and act quickly. It's a $2 billion plan or $1.8 billion plan. I believe that amount of money deserves some scrutiny, some discussion, and some community conversation before it goes on the ballot.
Rebecca in Lakewood. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to challenge. It's sort of related to what you were just saying.
I think that the city council president is basing his opinion on whether the voters would vote for it or are ready to vote for it on anecdotal evidence when, as you just mentioned, the polling shows that the voters are ready to vote and the voters are ready to say yes to this plan. And so it's very frustrating to hear hear him say that, that, you know, he's hearing that people aren't, don't want to vote for it. I'm especially perturbed by the people saying, well, they don't have kids, so therefore, you know, they're not, or they don't have kids in the public school, so they don't want to vote for it. And, you know, I don't have kids, but I'm more than ready to, you know, make sure that, you know, it's our civic responsibility to make sure that we have, you know, schools that are in, you know, conditions such that our children can learn in a safe environment and, you know, attract, you also attract businesses if your schools are in good shape. And it's just very, very frustrating. I'm sure you're hearing that. I hope you're hearing that from the callers and the tweets.
Thanks for that, Rebecca. President Wilson, the folks out there are frustrated.
So I can say that I'm very close with my constituents. I've served those constituents for, I'm in my 13th year now. I know them well, and I'm only sharing conversations that they have shared with me. I've heard about other polling that's been done, but my comments were based on conversations I've had. I don't have any children, but I went to the public schools here in Duval County, and many of those public schools are still in use today, and they were in pretty bad shape then. So I understand the need. I just want to make sure the public understands exactly what they're voting on. And once the city council places on the ballot, I have no more control to ensure that those public hearings are held.
Here's an email from JD. The more delay, the more decay. By taking away the school board's ability to handle school problems, the city council is effectively taking responsibility on itself. The families affected by these issues should take them directly to the city council. Are you worried at all about that? As people perceive that the city council is, in their minds, improperly kicking the legs out from under the school board or the OGC's office has, what if people start coming directly to the city council with school-related issues?
We have no way to prepare a list of needs the school board has. They have a budget that they've been working with for the past, I guess, 10 years. And I understand that some of these things have become more complicated, more complex over time. I wish that this referendum would have come to us a year ago, and then maybe it would be on the ballot last May.
You could have just put it on the ballot. You could have just said, you know, the OGC's opinion has been called dubious by other legal experts. Here it goes. Here it is on the ballot. Go.
Well, again, when I listen to my constituents, the people who elected me to office, the people who I represent, they want to understand more about the plan. And I believe that that is a fair conversation to have.
There have been so many other matters making news around town. Let's get into a couple of them, including the potential sale of JEA. We have a tweet from a listener. Where does the council president stand on the push to sell JEA?
So this has all come about pretty quickly. I learned about it, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago when the board meeting happened. The invitation to bid is on the street now. And I believe the invitation to bid prohibits me from really discussing the details of it. The city council will have a role in this, and the public will have a role in this. Once the invitation to bid time period closes, I assume JEA will then review those bids and present the city council with something. At that time, we'll have conversations, and I've already said to JEA that I expect community conversations. So I expect similar things as to what I'm asking the school board to do. I want JEA to go out there and have meetings throughout town where the public can attend, ask questions, and better understand what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it.
And this would have to go before the voters, too.
Yes.
And so what about that?
Yes. So if the city council decides to place it on the ballot, we will place it on the ballot, and the voters will ultimately decide.
Let me get you on the record, too, as well, about the plans to demolish the Jacksonville Landing and the tax incentives for the development of Lot J around TIAA Bank Field. Your thoughts about that whole process.
So the Jacksonville Landing issue, the public really began the outcry after we voted on the plan to demolish it. The plan to demolish it was included with the settlement with Tony Slaman. At the time, I originally was concerned about demolishing the landing. And as I thought about it, I realized that it's a metal building, two-story building, that spreads out across the entire piece of property. If you really want to redevelop that property, having a clean slate makes it much easier to do so. I believe that some sort of high-rise with retail on the first couple floors, closer to the Water Street area, and then having an open space where the river's at. That's an area where we could have festivals, activities, fireworks. People could come out there, bring their blankets, and sit and watch those type of activities. I think it's a great opportunity for us to have a public space the public can use. It connects the Riverwalk with Laura Street to Hemming Park. And I just believe that's a great opportunity that we have.
We would be the only city that has an old festival marketplace to tear it down. Other cities have found ways to reuse them. What about that?
So when you say reuse them,
adaptive reuse, you know, like changing it somehow.
So we would keep it a two-story building and it would spread across the entire property still?
I think that'd be up to whatever bids came in, looking at how they might change it.
I think you get a better opportunity to get better bids if you have a clean slate of property.
And what is your reaction to those who, on the one hand, they're excited about the Lot J development. On the other, they've raised eyebrows about how much city money is going towards it, hundreds of millions of dollars.
So I really haven't had a chance to delve into this much yet. I have a lot of this stuff going on. At first look, it is a lot of city dollars. And so my concern is, how do we recoup those city dollars over time? And I believe we will recoup those city dollars through property tax revenue. It'll take a long time to do that, but it provides an opportunity for investment. What I would like to do is I would like to have a conversation about splitting that property out of the community redevelopment area to where the property tax revenue that we do receive would go back into the general fund. Right now, the property tax revenue we would receive goes into that community redevelopment area, which is the downtown district. And I know I have some friends that are going to say, Scott, downtown really needs it. But I will tell them that anytime you take money from the general fund, it hurts the people I represent, because the only opportunities we have for any type of development or any type of infrastructure improvements is through that general fund.
And let's talk lastly about the city's budget. As council president, you're working on that too.
Yes. So, you know, we have a finance team. They are reviewing the budget now, and they are doing a great job going through that budget. The mayor's budget includes things like more money for UF Shands and several other things. I'm more interested in a couple of initiatives that I've had in my district for a long time. I have a senior center coming in. We have 19 senior centers in Jacksonville. And there's nothing anywhere on the south side of town. So this will give an opportunity for the people I represent to attend and participate in activities close to their home. I have another initiative, Ivy Road Park off Southside Boulevard in the old Century 21 neighborhood. This park is full of that old mining sand. And so we're going to remove that sand hopefully this year. And then we'll be able to develop that park into a space where those children can go and play. Century 21 is an older neighborhood where the residents have very small yards and areas to enjoy themselves. So the park will give children a place to go.
Lots happening. So we appreciate you sharing your insights on a number of hot issues. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
He's Jacksonville City Council President Scott Wilson. Hope you'll come back sometime soon. And later in the hour, Games, Art, and Music is headed to the First Coast this weekend. We'll take a look at that. But up next, the state of downtown. We'll be right back.
The First Coast Free Thought Society presents River Uprising by Shannon Blankenship of the St. John's Riverkeeper, August 19th, 6:30 p.m. at the Buckman Bridge Unitarian Church. More at firstcoastfreethoughtsociety.org.
Sporer Dodd, a Florida-based law firm with a reputation for skilled, aggressive advocacy against corporations, individuals, and government agencies. Sporer Dodd has recovered over $1 billion on behalf of clients. Learn more today at sdlitigation.com.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio, using Uber data to measure the gender pay gap.
So the fare itself is determined by an algorithm, which is gender blind. The dispatch itself is gender blind.
And we could rule out those theories from the beginning.
What do those data say?
Yeah, you know, we found something very surprising.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Sunday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT for a private member reception and screening of the new Downton Abbey movie on Thursday, September 19th at the Cinemark Tinseltown. 6 p.m. reception and 7 p.m. screening. $50 donation. Costumes are encouraged. For more information, go to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. It's an ambitious goal for downtown, doubling the number of people living in this city's urban core. That's just one of the data points you can look at with the new State of Downtown report. It's out. Jake Gordon is the CEO of Downtown Vision, Inc. He's here with more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So you've got a new report out looking at the state of downtown. What do we learn?
Melissa, downtown's doing great. I mean, it's already been great, and I love downtown Jacksonville, but our goal at Downtown Vision is to help make downtown a better place to live, work, visit, and invest. And we're seeing kind of a generational transformation in downtown Jacksonville. Right now, there's $1 billion worth of projects under construction. And so you think about that, which doesn't even seem real to me until you take the report and look at the map and start counting all the investment and counting all the dots. And there's almost 3.5 times that, another $3.6 billion proposed in these giant projects like Lot J, but the shipyards, the district that's on the South Bank. There are huge projects that are happening, but there's also smaller infill housing projects that are happening and tons of other retail and other great projects that are happening right now. And so, you know, without, our downtown's only going to become truly great with investment, with people. And so we're seeing that in our report. All the statistics are up.
You're pushing along with the Jacksonville Chamber to double the number of people living downtown within the next few years. How are you going to do it?
Oh, well, I'm so excited. I mean, Daniel Davis and the Jacksonville Chamber are leaders on this issue, right? All of the businesses of the region, and they've kind of decided that downtown matters and that the way to downtown success is downtown residents, which I truly believe in. A neighborhood is only as great as the people that live there. All of the people of Jacksonville make our city great. And so the people that live in downtown are even more important than people work downtown because they're going to be there all the time. So right now, you know, we just crossed over the 5,000 resident threshold, which relative to other cities is not great given the size of where we're at. And so to double that number in just a couple years, it's hard to quantify the impact that will have, but all of the things we want out of our downtown are possible with more people, and especially more people living downtown.
More people living downtown is the key. Let me ask you as a follow-up, ambitious plans we're learning about to develop Lot J around the football stadium. At the same time, there has been some concern that it could draw energy and traffic away from the traditional urban core. How do you manage that?
You know, to me, downtown is for everyone, right? Lot J is not just for downtown, it's for a whole city. Where do you take people now when they come to visit from out of town? I'm from New Jersey originally. My parents live in California. You know, Lot J, these quarters companies, there's Xfinity Live in Philadelphia. When I used to live there, I went there. So the idea that having an entertainment district, and it's not that far away, Melissa, we're, you know, the idea that you can walk there, if you're talking about other football stadiums like in Santa Clara is 2 hours from San Francisco. Foxborough is nowhere near Boston. And so the idea that our entertainment district is just slightly more walkable, I think that there's plenty of room for everyone, right? I mean, if the pie is growing, everyone's getting a slice. If we're just dividing up the pie differently, but I do think that like a billionaire owner of our sports franchise that wants to put a ton of his money there, the city definitely needs to look at contributing into that area and creating an amazing amenity for everyone.
And let me ask you as well, as downtown grows, and as you said, there are so many new projects, at the same time, there are lots of unoccupied buildings and empty lots. That has come under criticism. What are your concerns about that as the CEO of Downtown Vision, Inc.?
Well, you know, the public conversation on downtown is exciting because I do think no matter what people's opinions are, everyone is supporting downtown, which I actually don't think has always been true in Jacksonville. I've only been here for 4 years. I moved my family here. Kids go to public school. I love Jacksonville, and I want to stay here my whole life. And the idea is that we all want what's best for our community. So there are a lot of issues out there. You know, investment in downtown city building is a fickle thing. People think it's mostly the city, but it's mostly private investment. If someone comes along tomorrow on a vacant lot, I am very open to helping them and figure out what they want. And I think that the economics have been such that a lot of the things in downtown have been subsidized by the city, and every city subsidized things in our downtown. But if you see, there's more private development happening than ever before. And actually, the private investment is really what's going to push us over the top. And when you really have a thriving metropolis and a downtown and urban core, things are happening all the time. They're opening and closing. And so I do think that vacant lots and vacant buildings, they're being purchased. And then our only hope is that people are doing things that we want. You know, the landing is always mentioned. And people have asked me, you know, what do we want with the landing?
Where are you on the landing?
My answer is always, what do we need at the landing? Something to be proud of. You know.
So you're not taking a position on the demolishing of the landing?
Well, I think it's happening. And I think that the public process is doing a process. I do truly believe there has been a public process. I will personally say that I was here for about 3.5 years. Not one person said that we should save that building as a historic structure, to me, in my personal experience. And as soon as the politics got involved on some level, there's a lot of anxiety related to it. I also am a little confused as to a waterfront park on the river at the end of Lower Street that would be could be a jewel. I mean, again, it's all of it's done right. And again, something we can be proud of, right? There was a project that had a Ferris wheel attached to it. And it's like a $100 million project. Everyone wants to talk about the Ferris wheel. But the reality is there are Ferris wheels people are very proud of in cities, and there are Ferris wheels that maybe they don't like. So it's all about the details. And so it is a hard thing, but I'd much rather have a project be going on and things happening than what was there. I mean, I think, you know, 4 different mayors fought with the owner of the landing in terms of that. And no one on my board of directors or people I talked to thought that it was the highest and best use of what was going on right there. And so, you know, it was more important to downtown than it was to the owner. And I'm very happy that the owner sold it to the city, because I do think the city and the mayor specifically has the best interests of the people at heart and the best interests of downtown. I do think that.
There is so much more, meanwhile, in your report that we couldn't even get into. If you go to downtownjacksonville.org, you can learn all about the state of downtown and the work of Downtown Vision, Inc. Jake Gordon, always great to see you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And in a moment, games, art, and music. This weekend's big spaced out event. We'll tell you about it next.
Dodd is a personal injury law firm based in Jacksonville with over 150 years of legal experience. Sporer Dodd is known for their legal expertise, experience, and results. Learn more at sdlitigation.com.
The First Coast Free Thought Society presents River Uprising by Shannon Blankenship of the St. John's Riverkeeper, August 19th, 6:30 p.m. at the Buckman Bridge Unitarian Church. More at firstcoastfreethoughtsociety.org.
On the next Fresh Air.
It's okay. I'm estimating that this little guy is probably about 5 days old.
That's Hannah Shaw, a.k.a. the Kitten Lady. Her mission is rescuing orphaned neonatal and older kittens and teaching people how to care for them. She has a new book called Tiny But Mighty. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
One day, a few years ago, an Austrian woman's teenage daughter asked to visit a friend. She promised to be back by 3 p.m.
Mom, please trust me. And I say, okay, my dear, I will trust you.
The next time she heard from her, she was in Syria living under ISIS. We follow that mother's journey to get her daughter and grandson back this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Bill de Blasio wields tremendous political power running America's largest city, but New York's mayor says he's ready to win the Democratic nomination and move from Gracie Mansion to the White House. He's low in the polls right now, but de Blasio says he's confident he can unseat another New Yorker, Donald Trump. Mayor Bill de Blasio answers your questions next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, Games, Art, and Music, or GAM, returns to town this weekend with a sci-fi and space theme. Ryan Thompson is the founder and president, and he's here now to take us straight into outer space. Hey, Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm really good, and it's good to see you. So Games, Art, and Music has really taken off around town. You do events all through the year. What is happening this weekend, and are we going into space?
We're going into space all over the universe and cosmos. Yeah, we're doing Space GAM this year, and it kind of started off as a joke, and then was like, let's do it for real.
So what does that mean? What's it going to look like?
Tons of space-related stuff. Like, we're doing artwork related to Halo, Star Fox, Mass Effect, like all these sci-fi games and movie properties. There's a little bit of Star Wars in there. Not a lot.
You gotta have a little bit, right?
Just enough to not get sued. That's my goal. But so much of the art is created by local artists. Like, they're working on this 25-foot mural right now, like Brittany Crawford, Jem Peake, who does this stuff actually in like Hemming Plaza. And people are just working 24/7 on this show this year just to make artwork that's kind of game and space related.
Okay, so what you envisioned is you're bringing together the gaming community, the sort of cosplay people, artists, and music all in one big mind-blowing event. That's
Man,
how
you're
this
good at selling this. Is let that, me tell you.
Yeah.
That is perfect. So yeah,
video. But you and I used to work at the PR firm together. We learned how to do this stuff, remember?
You're better than me at it.
No, not really.
You're statewide now.
Oh, so. hey, yeah. Got to give the props.
That's right.
Okay, so that's really the vibe of this, right?
Yes, video games, art, music, cosplay, all around a theme, nerdy gaming stuff. There's going to be food trucks. Jay the Entertainer from Quad City DJs is showing up to actually do the Space Jam song from the movie. It's going to be ridiculous.
Now, tell me a little bit, going beyond the event Saturday night, and by the way, it's at the Schultz Center on the South Side. Why do you think this culture this is a really specific culture that you're celebrating?
Yeah. In regards to the gamers or just nerd culture in general?
Both.
So I'm a nerd. I'm a gamer. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot more of us than people think. Like, it's so mainstream now, especially look like the Marvel movies and like Avengers and things of that nature, which technically Fast and Furious is kind of a superhero movie. But, you know, there's a lot of us. Like, we all celebrate these fandoms or things that we grew up with now. And so many of us are now getting to a point in our lives where we kind of have a chance to influence the next generation and give them more of what we would have liked when we were growing up and kind of instill some ethics and morality at the same time. So that's kind of like my reason for doing it, is so when the next group of people coming up, they have a positive influence to go into with these passions.
Yeah. When you were a kid, your only option was to maybe go to the comic book store.
Pretty much.
And buy the comics, right?
Yeah,
that was it.
And that comic book owner was creepy. I don't know if I would go back today.
No, kids have, they can get this stuff on a number of different platforms.
Exactly. They can get it digitally anywhere, but that's when you lose the human engagement part. And that's why I think it's so important to have events like this where people can actually get together in the real world and celebrate these passions and fandoms and do something good at the same time.
There will be a charity component to the Big Bash Saturday night. Now, Are people encouraged to come in their full cosplay glory?
Go all out.
What should people wear?
If you're not a cosplayer,
what are you going to wear?
What am I going to wear? A bunch of different wigs.
nice. No.
If you're not a cosplayer, you know, go to Target, get a shirt. You'll be fine. If you are a cosplayer, go all out. We're giving... There's like hundreds of dollars in prizes for cosplayers. They got a cosplay championship ring. We really like celebrating cosplay at GAM. And for those of you who aren't into cosplay, yes, there's a charity art auction where 100% of the profits go to Extra Life Jacksonville, First Coast Normal Homeless Pets, and Jasmine, which is really important to us.
So dress as your favorite character. Come dress to impress.
Yes.
Because you got to impress you.
Please, please impress
You're
me.
You're the head honcho.
I'm nothing. Impress everybody else. Everybody else has more say than everybody knows that Ryan's obsolete at this point. It's everybody else who makes GAM happen.
You have grown this into such a cool thing, and I remember the first year you did it. So nothing but
props
to you.
You've constantly supported the nerd community, Melissa.
That's right, because I'm a nerd too.
Since day one, that's why you're statewide, nationwide. Next,
that's
gonna
right.
happen.
You can be my agent. How about that?
Done. I'll take a 1% cut.
Okay.
I'll be cheap.
In the meantime, go to Ryan's website. It's gamshow.com, GAAMshow.com for Saturday night's big games, art, and music bash at the Schultz Center. The theme is space, baby. So get creative with your costumes and say hi to Ryan for me. Have fun.
Say hello. And I threw in a code, Melissa25. If you want 25% off, I'm selling it.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Heather Schatz is our producer. Michelle Corum directs the show. And we always want your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Make sure to listen for that. And if you're listening to our replay tonight, keep listening for music. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.